Welcome to the Your Oxygen Mask First podcast. I'm Erin Young, and this is a space where we explore ways to help the helpers. Because you can't help anyone before you help yourself. So sit back, put your own oxygen mask on, and enjoy the ride. Thank you so much for joining us, and I am ecstatic. I'm not super excited anymore. I am ecstatic to be joined by Ryan Dedman. And if you are in the 911 dispatching community at all, you know who this guy is. He's semi-famous. He's not fully famous yet, but he's semi-famous. I had a little of a fangirl moment when I met him in an airport, a couple hundred miles away. But he is the outreach director for the 911 Training Institute, and he's also a major instructor at Kim Turner LLC. So again, if you've been in public safety, especially in the dispatch realm, you may have been taught by him or seen some trainings come up that Ryan has done. So thank you so much for joining us, Ryan.
That's my pleasure, Erin. How are you?
I'm doing excellent after a couple of animalistic crises in my house this morning, yeah. But it's better now.
Okay, good. I'm glad to hear that.
Right. We had a bee moment where there's a bee hanging off of a dog, and then we also had a regurgitated mouse somewhere in the house. So it was a lovely morning.
A bee hanging off of a dog and a regurgitated mouse.
It's a zoo here. Welcome to my world.
Literally and figuratively.
Yes. And how are you?
I am better than I deserve. Thank you for asking.
And you have been kind of a busy guy. This is your first like break moment that you've had in the past couple of weeks, right?
Yeah, in the past couple of weeks. Let's see here. It started at the end of July. I was in New Mexico for a couple of days doing some training with Kim Turner. And then I got home for a few days. And then I was in Vegas for the APCO International Conference for a few days. And then I got home for a few days. And then I went to Kansas City, Missouri for the CIT International Conference for a few days. And I got home and then immediately went to teaching for 2 days. And now here I am on a Sunday morning with you. So I'm glad to have my feet up today.
Excellent. And I did not get a chance to see you at APCO. We kind of, our paths crossed in the Vegas night.
Yes, like ships passing in the night, in the Vegas night.
Mm-hmm. So
I mean, that conference is only attended by a few thousand people. So, I mean.
Yeah, they shut down Fremont or half of Fremont Street for us. So that could give you an indication of how many people were actually there.
Okay, and so I was gone before the little after party, what do they call it? Networking mixer party thing. So I was not there that night.
Mm-hmm. It was impressive. There was a lot of people, and I've never been to Fremont Street before. I've been to Vegas quite a few times, but I've never actually been to Fremont Street. So it was a experience.
Now that surprises me because you're a Nevada girl, right?
I am a Nevada girl, but Vegas is about an 8-hour drive or an hour and a half plane ride from me. So it's not as close as people seem to think it is. So
okay.
It takes effort for me to get down there.
Okay.
So let's talk a little bit about yourself for people who don't know who you are or come from other helping professions or are just here for a good time. Who are you and where have you been so deep?
Well, I started my law enforcement career in 2002. I was a senior in college and I needed an internship to graduate. You know, I thought I could just stroll into the lobby of my local police department. They would put me straight away to work, but it doesn't quite work like that. I live in Southern California, and a lot of agencies in the region, the greater region where I live, in like Orange County, Los Angeles County, you can't even just volunteer at your local police department. Even volunteers go through a background check. And I didn't have any family in law enforcement or anything like that. That was kind of a shocking moment for me as I started to navigate the process of just trying to, you know, volunteer for some hours to meet an educational requirement. But I found an internship at the Anaheim Police Department in Anaheim, California, home to the happiest place on earth. Yeah, I started working there as an intern in the gang division, and I did that for about 8 months. And then the department hired me to be a police cadet. which is kind of like a step in between explorer and police officer, if you have explorers at your agency. In 2004, I put myself through the police academy, graduated, and then the communications manager at the Anaheim Police Department approached me and said, "Hey, I'd love to promote you to be a dispatcher." So I accepted that and worked in dispatch for about 8 months before I left the city of Anaheim to go to another neighboring agency here in Orange County to be a police officer. And that lasted about 5 minutes before I realized that the job was just not for me. I was like 3/4 of the way through the field training program and was struggling mightily. But then I was not enjoying it like I thought I would. And there were parts of it that I was not as good at as I thought I could have been. And I was miserable. I was not happy. So I gracefully bowed out of that agency. And then I returned to the city of Anaheim to be a dispatcher for them for 7 or 8 more years before I retired in 2013. And then ever since, I have been busy doing lots of things. In 2014, I joined the instructional staff at the Regional Criminal Justice Training Center at Golden West College in Huntington Beach, California. It's a community college, but they have a police academy on their campus and along with a regional criminal justice training center where they teach lots of training classes for law enforcement, including dispatchers. And then also in 2014, I had the pleasure to get connected with Jim Marshall, who's a mental health professional and the director of the 911 Training Institute. At that time, he was the CEO of the 911 Wellness Foundation, which was a nonprofit organization that worked to optimize the overall health and well-being of public safety dispatchers nationwide. They were doing lots of cool projects that I wanted to be involved with and working with them on those projects. That nonprofit organization dissolved in 2017 because NENA absorbed a lot of the programs and projects that we were working on. So the nonprofit organization dissolved, but Jim already had his private training company called the 911 Training Institute at the time. So then he coerced me against my will to work for him privately and his training company. And then let's see, also in 2014, man, that was a busy year. that's the first time I met Kim Turner, who is now the administrator, the communications administrator for the San Bernardino County Sheriff's Department here in California. She and I actually showed up at the same class because we were both invited to the same class to speak on a block training portion for that class. And that's when I first met Kim. And then about a year and a half ago, she started her own training company called Kim Turner LLC. I know, so original. and she enjoyed it. She invited me to join a few other people she had identified that she wanted to be instructors for her company. So I have the privilege of doing lots of teaching and training and speaking engagements and otherwise, primarily for dispatchers, since that's my background, but then also for police officers. So yeah, I run around like my pants are on fire all over the place.
So what's your favorite topic to teach or instruct?
Trauma, like trauma exposure and management is one of the classes that I teach for Kim Turner. It's just awesome because it's a perfect blend of my experience working as a dispatcher, but then also my personal experience in handling trauma, both in my personal life and in my professional career. But then also I get to tap into my education too, because I have a master's in psychology. And, you know, you don't need a master's degree to be a dispatcher. So all the while that I had my master's degree and was working as a dispatcher, I never felt like I really put it to use. And now it really comes into play in some of the teaching and training that I get to do. I also love just teaching general classes about like wellness, specifically for first responders, in giving them a better insight and self-awareness on things that they can do in their life, you know, to optimize their personal health and well-being. Because we find that when we do that inadvertently, by default, we also optimize your work performance. If you're happy and healthy, you show up to work, you're a better employee. And if you're a better employee, you're happy and healthy at work, that also spreads like wildfire. And before you know it, everyone on your shift feels like you do. We raise the morale in our comm centers and at our agencies. And before you know it, working as a dispatcher isn't all the doom and gloom that we stereotypically portray it.
That's crazy talk.
I know, right? See, didn't I just do a little psychology voodoo magic on you right there?
Yeah, that was impressive.
Yeah, but you know, so we don't ever really think of it like that. We don't. And I don't know what the state of Nevada is like, but in the state of California, when you get hired to be a dispatcher, you go through basically like a dispatch academy, which is 3 weeks, 120 hours of training. But nowhere in that foundational training do we ever really sit down with newly hired dispatchers and give them a comprehensive overview of how stressful this job is, but then how you can mitigate that. Because the stress and the trauma that they are inevitably going to experience in their career, it doesn't have to make for a miserable working experience.
I think in my experience, we do a really good job of warning them that it's going to be stressful, it's going to suck, and your life is going to change. But then we kind of leave them high and dry and don't tell them how to avoid that or how they can fix it if they find themselves kind of sliding. It's just, right, this is the job and this is what you signed up for, so figure it out.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we unintentionally instill in them a mindset of, this is what you signed up for. Suck it up, buttercup. Like, this is your job. This is what you are here to do. This is why you get paid. And although that is true, that mindset is setting them up for failure. I mean, no one is going to have that mindset and successfully have a healthy career that lasts 30 years in this industry. And so we have to re-examine how we share that with newly hired dispatchers. Because although that is true, you're right, we have to give them tools for their toolbox that they can later tap into and use at their judgment and discretion, instead of just saying, yep, this is a stressful job. Welcome aboard. Now go get to work. That's not setting them up for a successful 30-year career as a public safety dispatcher.
And one of the stats that I heard at conference this past couple of weeks was that your average employee is not going to be the employee that stays for those 30 years and makes it to a retirement. The new generation of new hires, not classifying them as millennials or anything else, but just people who are now coming into the dispatching field, they will stay for maybe 3 to 5 years before they realize that it may be too hard for them or it's just not what they want.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. And you know, and that just goes into play in creating various types of problems for the rest of us when we talk about being so short-staffed and retention problems. And now all of the rest of us experience the challenges of having to work overtime and trying to meet minimum staffing requirements and all of that. We just moan, groan, and complain about all of those issues when really we could look at it through a different lens, right? And this is actually one of the things that I've learned from Kim Turner. And it's probably based a lot on her experience working in management now, obviously as the administrator. She has, you know, challenged people that having dispatchers only work for your agency for 3 to 5 years, like that in and of itself, there's nothing so wrong with that. There's not. It's just, what are we doing as agencies now to make sure that those 3 to 5 years, we get out of that employee the best dispatcher that we're able to get? And instead, I think we, whether it be through training or otherwise, we instill a negative mindset and we look at it through a negative lens, and then the rest of us just moan and complain about the problems that creates for the rest of us at the agency who stay longer. And instead, I think we should change our attitude and change our mindset and look like, you know, for if Johnny wants to be a dispatcher, but Johnny's got higher goals and aspirations, and he's only using the position of a dispatcher as a stepping stone to achieve those higher goals and aspirations, then so what? Congratulations, Johnny. Like, welcome aboard. We're going to make sure that these 3 to 5 years for you, one, work out good for us as an agency, but then two, that we also give you some professional grooming in order to help you succeed in life. So there's nothing wrong with having that perspective. And I think we need to change that, because too many people look at it through the other lens. It's like, no, you know, when you sign up to be a dispatcher, you're signing up for the long haul, and you're going to be stuck in this career for 20, 30 years. And there is nothing else to do except 911. You eat, breathe, and live 911. And if you don't, then, you know, that's not what we're about, and you're not a good fit here. And I don't think that's the right attitude to have anymore, especially like you brought up, like with a younger generation of people entering the workforce. You know, that's not their attitude. It's not. So we as agencies and as trainers and leaders at our agencies need to change our attitudes in order to compromise and meet them halfway to make sure that, one, they're successful as individuals, but then two, we also get the best out of them while they are contributing to our agencies as employees while they are serving there.
Absolutely. And the more we make it better for them, who knows, they may decide to stay. You're not guaranteed that, you know, I want to be a police officer, this is just a stepping stone, but that could take years. And if the job is rewarding and it will wind up being this person's calling, maybe, so why are we not making it desirable for them?
Exactly. And you know what, these challenges aren't unique to any one agency. I mean, we all experience them nationwide, whether you work police, fire, or EMS, and whether you're a primary PSAP or a secondary PSAP. These have been challenges that all of us have faced recently within the last few years.
So as far as changing maybe that the culture or how we treat the newcomers, how we frame that lens that they're going to look out of, what would you say is the best advice for senior dispatchers or people who are already established in a dispatching job to help these people and help themselves kind of reframe their outlook on the position?
Well, that's a great question. I think it starts, and no pun intended, but I think your senior people have to put their oxygen mask on first. So you can't expect to help or train anyone else when you're not in a position to do it yourself. And in my experience, there are too many of our more veteran and experienced dispatchers working in comm centers all across the country who are suffering from things like burnout and compassion fatigue and secondary vicarious trauma and acute stress and post-traumatic stress. And the reason for that is that because for so long, we have told them, that older generation, to suck it up, buttercup. Like, this is what you signed up for. Get in there and get back to work. And that has not helped all of them experience a healthy and happy professional career. And so then as a result, I think some of them have that mindset. Well, you know, this isn't how it worked for me when I first got hired. So that's not how it's going to work for the younger generation when they get hired now. And if the wheel ain't broke, why fix it, kind of thing? Well, to some degree, that may be true, but what if we could reinvent the wheel so that it runs more smoothly and efficiently? So just because it's not broken doesn't mean that there's not ways that we can improve its functionality. And one of the examples I use is, especially for more veteran dispatchers, I say, just look at how much your job has evolved in the last 10 years. And for those working longer, look at how much your job has evolved in the last 20 years. Your veteran dispatchers, your older generation of dispatchers share stories of, you know, doing call taking and radio dispatching without CAD systems. like computers, like we didn't use computers. We used pen, paper, and we wrote everything down on cards. And, you know, we handed those cards back and forth to one another, and the cards were color coded at the time. I say, see, that's a perfect example. I mean, just look at how far our industry has come to this point. And just look at how much further it is going to go in the future. So if we look at how much next generation 911 technology is going to change the way that we do jobs in the coming future, I mean, this industry, that just goes to prove that this industry is evolving. And we as dispatchers have to evolve with it in order to have healthy, happy, successful 30-year careers in this industry.
What do you think is lacking? Why are we not able to achieve this already?
I think it's just been a lack of self-awareness. It's been a lack of education. And you know what? The responsibility for that falls on people like me, who are public safety trainers and teach various types of training classes, whether it be for newly hired dispatchers or even veteran experienced dispatchers who need like continuing education and training. It falls on people like me and private industry partners who do that to bring more self-awareness to the dispatchers, to legitimize some of the things that they experience as dispatchers. And so we say, you know what, like, it's okay to have a bad day at work. Like, it's okay. And it's okay to experience a very strong emotional reaction to some of the tough calls that we routinely handle. Like, that's okay. Congratulations. Welcome to the human species. You're normal. And we have not done that in the past. We haven't. In the past, we have said, you know, you handled a tough call. Like, so what? That's what we do. Now get back to work. And if you're having trouble processing that tough call, then stand by, because now, like, there's something wrong with you. You are then viewed as possibly problematic, operating in some type of dysfunctional state, right? And then you become a liability to agencies. And now we have to figure out like what we're going to do with you because we're not entirely sure that you're healthy and competent to continue answering 911 emergency calls. And, you know, things like peer support teams have changed that culture to where we now tell people like it's okay to need a hot minute because you feel like you're an absolute mess after handling a high priority in progress critical incident that has just emotionally drained you, and you got to tap out. And that's okay. Take some time, tap into the resources that your agency, that your city or county has available for you to remain healthy.
And if you don't have peer support or any of those resources in place, what do you suggest people do to get that started?
Well, there are a lot of organizations, private and nonprofit and everything in between, that specifically work to do that and help public safety agencies develop, build, and then implement those types of programs into operations. If you don't have something like that at your agency, I would strongly recommend you to do some research. Do your homework and do your research and figure out what that looks like at other agencies that are comparable in size and operations to the agency where you work. See what it looks like at that other agency and do a cost benefit analysis and note all of the pros and all of the cons and figure out how it can work at your agency.
And let's talk about burnout for a hot minute, because I know that this is fresh on my mind and some people and I have been discussing it because it seems pretty prevalent. It was a pretty big theme at APCO. Give me your thoughts on burnout.
Well, in my dispatching career, I can tell you that I experienced burnout. I mean, there were plenty of days when I was sitting behind the console, you know, clicking the answer button on those phone calls, whether they were 911 calls or just non-emergency business related calls. And like my heart was not in it. My mind was not in it. I was tired, frustrated, irritated by lots of various things, but you have to take a step back and look at, when I'm working in that state, what kind of service is that providing to the citizenry who has to contact the agency where I work for whatever type of service or response? And the answer is, you know, that's not good. One, it's not good for me as an individual, but then that's doing no service to the people who lived in the city where I worked, who talked to me. I was not working at a high professional standard, and I was not offering to them the best service that I could have. And that's because I felt burned out. I was suffering from things like burnout and compassion fatigue, and I didn't have the tools at that time in my life to take a step back and really do some introspective self-examination and figure out the triggering points that were really setting me off and that I was having trouble surpassing, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And so, like in the training classes that I do, I really try to help dispatchers be more self-aware of things like that. Aaron, when it comes down to it, like here's the thing. There's no big secret to it. Like there's no magic formula. There's no concoction that I can whoop up and make into a purple pill for you to take that will make all of those things go away. Because what works for one person in regards to improving their wellness does not work for the person sitting right next to them. And so I challenge people, challenge dispatchers to really figure out, one, where they're at and the things that they find troublesome as triggers that really seem to set off these strong emotional feelings that impact their work performance. Because if you're more self-aware of that, you can recognize, one, when you experience those triggers, but then two, how your body reacts to them, both cognitively, emotionally, physically, and behaviorally. And that's half the battle right there. I just try to raise self-awareness through education. And I put a lot of the responsibility back on the dispatcher, right? If you and I are talking, I would have to say, you know what, Aaron, like, here are some general things that you can expect to experience regarding feeling like you're suffering from compassion fatigue and burnout. But in order to change that, that responsibility lies on you. And that's not something that I can figure out for you. You have to figure that out. So does that mean getting more sleep for you? Does that mean changing your diet? Does that mean getting more physical exercise? Does that mean improving your social supports? Maybe that means medication. That has its place in wellness. There are lots of things that people need to examine, pillars, if you will, that stand on top of the foundation of wellness that help improve and change feelings of compassion fatigue and burnout. Because you don't have to feel like that your entire career.
That's not the normal.
No, it's not the normal. It's not healthy. However, feeling like that doesn't mean there's something wrong with you. Feeling like that, those symptoms are normal. It's your reaction to those symptoms. And most of us, we don't react to those symptoms. We just continue to sit in our chairs, put on our headsets, plug in, log on, and try to forge on, because that's how we were trained when we first started our careers. And so then it is now my mission as a former dispatcher and now as a public safety trainer to try and change that mindset. And say, no, there are other ways that we can look at this in order to help optimize our lives, both personally and professionally.
Yeah, because I'm pretty much dead inside now. Actually, no, not really. But I hear that a lot. I have the darkness and I have no feelings anymore. And we laugh about it. But at the same time, it's that uncomfortable laughter because we know a little part of it is true. And that's really scary, right? That the reactions that you have, where if I watch a violent scene on TV now, I can't watch violent movies, bloody movies, gory movies, because I know my logical brain says that's fake, that's not real, but my flight or fight reaction doesn't know the difference. And so I will overtly react to that. So I just avoid it. However, in certain situations where something really, really bad is happening and I feel like I should have more emotion for it and I don't, that also kind of pings that red flag for me too. Is why am I not feeling upset about this? Why am I not having an emotional reaction to this? I should. That's normal. But I'm a different person than I ever thought I would ever be because of my job. And I think because of not taking care of myself or having that support or education as I'm growing up through the career of it, can I get that back? What do I do?
Yeah. So everything that you just described is a case in point for what I just talked about, right? Mm-hmm. So you are more self-aware in regards to recognizing those things in your life. Like when you see those violent moments on TV or in movies or things like that, that's like a red flag for you. Changing that mindset. So tell me, Aaron, why did you become a dispatcher?
Do you want the cliche answer or the real answer?
Both.
I wanted to help people.
Good. And isn't that one of the best things about being a dispatcher?
Absolutely.
So now let's take that further, right? What are some other best things about being a public safety dispatcher?
Being the first to know what's going on in your local area. People look up to you because of the nobility of your job. The satisfaction you do get if people are grateful for your help.
Yep. Now tell me, what are some of the best things about working for the respective agency where you work?
The municipality treats us very well. The benefits are great. We have really good user agencies that we service.
So let's review on that really quick then. You're saying you get to help people. You have a pretty exciting job. No 2 days are ever the same. Mm-hmm. You play a part in catching bad guys. That's pretty cool. You get to work with multi-million dollar pieces of the most advanced technological equipment. Pretty cool. Best things about your agency? Pay, not that bad, right? Mm-hmm. Things like scheduling, you know, do you work 312s or do you work 410s? Do you work 5/8s? Rotation, schedule, shift bid, the people you work with, treated as a family instead of, you know, like coworkers. Certainly the perks and the benefits that your agency, your organization offers you. If you're telling me all of that, then why do we have to have a podcast called Your Oxygen Mask First? Why do we have to have people like me who teach training classes on wellness and trauma and resiliency? If you're saying that you got this cool job where you get to do all of this cool stuff and you get paid really well to do it and you have all these sweet benefits, then why do we have to talk about things like stress management? Shouldn't you be happy? You all of those things that we just described. And if you're happy, shouldn't you be healthy? But the reason that we have to talk about all of those things is that this job is, by its very nature, extremely stressful. And so we have to do a better job of equipping dispatchers to remind them of all of the things that they felt on their first day on the job, even though now they're 10 years in. Because if I can remind you of what it felt like the first day you walked into your agency, logged on, plugged in, handled the call, and you got to experience the feelings of quote unquote helping someone, remember what that was like?
You're brilliant.
So if I can remind you of what that felt like and I can help you get back to there and put you on that path and change your mindset, then guess what? Then you don't feel so bad about showing up to work anymore. Then you're like, yeah, you know what? I do have a kick-ass job. I get to kick ass. I get to take names. I get to help people. I get to do really cool stuff. This job ain't so bad.
Yeah, you get to tell cops where to go. I mean, come on. Exactly. What's better than that?
It's just looking at it through a different lens. And you're right. Over time, if you're not careful and self-aware enough to recognize the red flags and triggers in your own life, then your lens and your paradigm begins to shift. And before you know it, your mindset and your attitude is just trudging along, clocking in because you need a paycheck, whatever the reason. And you look at yourself in the mirror one day and you're surprised by what you see and you ask yourself, man, how did I get here? So that's what I try and help dispatchers do. I help them recenter their focus on some of the things they felt and experienced when they first got hired, reminding them about how passionate they were about this job. And even though now they're a 10-year veteran, guess what? That doesn't mean that you can't be passionate anymore just because you're more experienced.
You should actually be more passionate because you have more experience.
Yes, but like you articulated, just the daily grind of handling those types of calls for us, it slowly ebbs away at that passion. And then before you know it, how do you feel? Just like you said, dead inside, right? All people are stupid. All people are looking out to hurt and victimize other people in the world somehow, some way. And why do we know this? From work, because that's who we talk to. And that's not an accurate portrayal of the truth.
So when do you know it's time to go? So say that you are beyond being self-aware, you're beyond getting help, you're beyond going to therapy or using any resources. How do you identify that maybe you should look for another profession?
Well, I don't think anyone is ever beyond. So if people choose to leave this profession, that's their discretion and judgment in making a decision that they feel like is best for them at that time in their life. But that does not mean that they made that decision because they're beyond help. Nothing could be further more from the truth. There are plenty of resources available to help dispatchers who feel like they're struggling. And whether it's struggling with something major and traumatic, or whether it's just struggling with the day-to-day grind of answering loud party calls and everything in between, there are plenty of resources available now to help dispatchers address those feelings that there were not years ago. And so one of the most important things that we all have to remember is that we're not alone. You are not alone. So if you feel like that, if you feel like you're struggling and that the challenge is just too great and you can't get over it, you can't move past it, you're beyond receiving any type of help, that's not true. You're not alone. Now, myself and countless others have walked down that lonely path, and you're not alone. If you choose to leave the profession, I want it to be made with a healthy mindset, not because you feel like you're at your rope's end with no other options, because that's not true.
That's incredibly profound. I never thought about it that way. I figure people leave because they just are done and can't take it anymore. But what you said makes total sense, that you should be in the right state of mind and make that decision, not under duress.
Yes. And too many of us do, because we feel like, you know, that's our only option. Mm-hmm. And it's not. If you need help, you know, I am at your service, and there are several other individual people, companies, organizations that are more than happy to provide you either with their services or get you connected to finding services that can help. That doesn't mean that you stay working as a dispatcher. Maybe you still decide that it's time for you to go. And if so, you know what? That's okay. But at least you've made that decision, like you said, not under duress, feeling that you have no other options and nobody else is there with you because you're alone in this journey and in this battle, and you're not.
No, I totally agree. We are not alone. And that's one of the whole points of me starting this podcast, was to reach out and connect with other people not necessarily just dispatchers, but other people who experience similar things and feel alone and feel like they need to have a conversation with somebody that understands. It's underscore the Me Too movement, but it's kind of like a Me As Well movement where I want to connect with people who have felt the same things and have done the same things and have similar experiences so we could talk about it and have that connection. Because I think that in Mr. Psychology, when you make connections with people, doesn't it do something to your brain chemistry?
Yeah, it absolutely does. And I think that's what makes people like me and Ricardo Martinez from Within the Trenches, Adam Tim from The Healthy Dispatcher, Tracy Eldridge from Rapid SOS. That's what makes people like us different. You know, we are not people now who work for private industry partners and who read fancy stuff in textbooks and who are now trying to sell you some type of product or service. No, like all of us have at one point like sat behind your console and have worn your headset, and we know exactly what it's like to take those calls. And I think that's why the classes that I teach are so much more relatable for the students who take my classes. It's because I'm not standing up there talking to them, trying to teach them about something else that I read in a textbook. It's because, nah, like, man, let's be real and let's have a real conversation right now, because I have been where you're at. Maybe I haven't been there as long. You know, my law enforcement career only spanned about 12 years. And some of the dispatchers who take my classes are, you know, 20-year veterans. So maybe I haven't done it as long, but I have experienced to a very strong degree exactly what it's like to do your job. And now as a result, you know, the things that I do and the things that, you know, those other people I named do, you know, we're able to have a more powerful impact that has like a ripple effect throughout the industry, because there ain't no BS here, right? I think that's what makes it all the more powerful. And so when in talking to people who approach me looking for various types of help or assistance, that's where I meet them at. You know, I don't talk to them as a guy with a master's degree in psychology or with all this, you know, higher education and all this professional training. And I say, yeah, I've been through two police academies and a dispatch academy, and I've had over, you know, X amount of hours and specialized training and this. No, like I'm a dispatcher just like you. And that relatable experience makes people more comfortable, the walls that they have built around their hearts and minds to protect them. But in reality, it has completely desensitized them. And now, like you said, you know, they feel dead inside and they're tired, burnt out, don't want to do it anymore, but feel like they don't have any other options. And they're at a fork in the road.
So, Ryan, if people wanted to get a hold of you and reach out, learn more about your training and or maybe just say hi, how do they get a hold of you?
I am active on various platforms of social media. So you can find me on Twitter at RyanDedman911. You can also find me on Instagram, where I like to post lots of pictures about, you know, the things that I get to do in my professional career now. You can find the 911 Training Institute on Facebook and on Twitter and on LinkedIn. And you can find Kim Turner LLC on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. Those are the companies that I'm involved with. You can find me and you can find those companies there, and you can learn about some of the exciting things that, you know, we're doing. And, you know, if you need help or any type of assistance, I want you to know that I'm available and I'm at your service in order to help address whatever needs you have. And, you know, if I can't answer your questions or if I can't provide you with the appropriate service, then I will find somewhere and get you connected to someone who can. Please feel free to reach out to me, whether professionally or, yeah, just say hi. I love, you know, crazy stalker fans who want to randomly meet me in airports while we're both traveling.
Yeah, I'm a stalker. But you do bring up a good point. We're all family, because even though I didn't know I've never met you before. We still had a great conversation and it felt like we've known each other forever because, you know, you're a homie, you're a dispatcher. You know, that was the type of connection I was looking for over at APCO was that, hey, you're a dispatcher, I'm a dispatcher. Let's talk dispatcher stuff and get into it. We're all family, and whether you like us or hate us, you know, we're going to be by you.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Do you have any closing thoughts?
Yeah. You know what? Let me tell you a quick story. I'll leave you with this. All right. And I'm going to blow your mind again.
Okay.
Do you know anything about redwood trees?
They're very large.
Yeah. The coastal California redwood tree is the tallest tree on planet Earth. Wow. So it grows to a height of just over 400 feet. Now think about that for a second. 400 feet. There's a tree that grows 400 feet tall. That's 100 feet taller than the Statue of Liberty. There's a tree that is 100 feet taller than the Statue of Liberty. And you would think a tree that ginormous in size would just need this root system that grew so deep into the ground, wrapping its roots around the core of the earth in order to hold that tree strong and steady just because of its size. But just as the opposite with the redwood. You see, its roots only grow about 5 feet deep into the ground. But instead of growing vertically downward, they grow out laterally. They intertwine and they fuse with the tree next to it, the tree next to it, tree next to it, and the tree next to it. So that instead of having a root system that only supports one individual tree, now you have this complex spider web root system supporting an entire forest that blankets most of Northern California. And you see, that is what dispatchers need to be for one another. Need to be a redwood tree for your partner and everyone else in this industry so that we can unitedly say we're a forest, we're a family, instead of feeling like we have to stand alone in the storm.
Whoa.
Be a redwood tree, Aaron.
Be a tree.
A redwood tree.
A redwood tree.
Yep.
Well, I appreciate that analogy. Yes, you did completely blow my mind. And I'm going to go around to tell everybody in my workspace that they need to be a redwood tree.
Yes.
I'm stealing your story. I'm going to put pictures of redwood trees around and I'll let you know how it works.
There you go. I expect to see pictures and have updates, as do all the other listeners of your podcast here.
Be a tree. Be a redwood tree.
Be more like a redwood tree.
That's awesome. Well, thank you, Ryan. I appreciate your time and taking the time out to come talk to us and all of your truth bombs, knowledge bombs. That was quite informative and entertaining.
Oh, the pleasure was mine, ma'am.
Thank you so much for taking the time to listen today. And I hope that you found something that really resonates with you. I can't wait to share even more. So please subscribe to the podcast. And you can find links to our resources in the description and at youroxygenmaskfirst.com.